Romans 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you are listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We do appreciate you listening in today. We hope you're having a good day so far. We are here at our new time, and so we may have some new listeners that were not used to hearing us at this time of the day on Tuesdays, but we're glad to be here one more time. We always take just a moment and let you know about Mount Lebanon. We are located just outside of Boone, 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And we have Sunday school for all ages, 10 a.m. on Sunday mornings. And then our Sunday morning worship service is at 11 a.m. And every Wednesday night we have our midweek prayer and Bible study at 7 p.m. And I'm currently preaching through the book of Mark. And so we'd love for you to come out and be with us. We have other service times as well, second and fourth Sunday night. But you can check our church website for that information. We wanted to let you know about that. It's good to see Noah today. He's in the studio helping us with the radio broadcast. And how's your day going, Noah?
It's going well. It's good to be here this morning. And we do want to say welcome to all those listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA and 96.5. Right out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690 WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia. And our listeners on 89.1 FM The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners, and we are looking at a subject, and the title is Common Sense. And what we mean by that, or what we've been talking about, there was a pamphlet. Sometimes it's called the pamphlet that helped spark a revolution. It was written by a man named Thomas Paine, and it was published in January of 1776. And we've been reading that book and looking through just some of the highlights. I'm not taking, we're not doing a word-by-word study or anything like that, but we're just taking some of the highlights that was prevalent among the thoughts in our country when our country started as it is. And so there's a lot of good, and it seems like, and we've said this before, that that's a good title for it, Common Sense. It seems like in our day and time, common sense has been thrown out the window. But we had an introduction a couple of weeks ago and just sort of led into that. Then last week we talked about what common sense says about the purpose of government. And we gave three great truths concerning the purpose of government. And the reason that I said these are three great truths is because this is exactly what the Bible teaches that the purpose of government is. And Thomas Paine went over that and referred to the scripture. You know, a lot of people say, well, those people, they didn't believe in God, or they didn't, you know, do this and do that. Boy, they sure used a whole lot of scripture and scriptural examples for people that sometimes they say didn't even believe in God. Well, he certainly did in his use of examples. But the three great truths are this. He made the case, first of all, that the purpose of government is necessary because of evil. And I said it like this: government is necessary because of sin. You know, if everybody would just do right, you wouldn't have to have government, you wouldn't have to have police, you wouldn't have to have law enforcement, you wouldn't have to have lawyers, you wouldn't have to have a lot of things in this life. You wouldn't have to have jails, you wouldn't have to have prisons, if people just live by the golden rule. You know, if we just love God and love your neighbor with all of your heart, those are the two greatest commandments. But because evil is a fact, because sin is a fact of life, somebody is always going to be stealing from somebody else, and somebody is going to rob somebody else, and somebody's going to hurt another person, and somebody's going to kill somebody. And so government is necessary because of the presence of sin in the world. Number two great truth is that government is necessary to protect freedom. A government is actually to be a protector of freedom. And then number three goes right along with that. government is necessary because it is a provider of security. And so how government protects freedom and provides security is in punishing the evildoer. In the Bible, that great chapter in the Bible on government, Romans chapter number 13, talks about these things, that if you don't do evil, you don't have anything to worry about. But if you do evil, fear. God has given the authority of vengeance to the government, and government or human rule bears not the sword in vain. And so government protects, government provides security, that someone would not come in and steal your property, that someone would not come in and harm you and your family. So there is a security there that is provided by the punishing of evil. All right, we talked about those things last week. This week we're going to talk about something else that is pointed out in the book, Common Sense. And we're going to talk about the evil of monarchy. The evil of monarchy. Now, monarchy is this. Monarchy is government by kings. Now, of course, in America, you have to realize and always remembering our history when you study about these things. But if America would become a free and independent nation, they would have to change their minds about being ruled by a king. Colonial America was under British rule, being ruled at that time by King George. And Thomas Paine said this. He said, mankind being originally equals in the order of creation. And then he goes on and he makes the argument he talks about that it is an evil that some men establish themselves as kings over other men. And then the folly of that is that their sons become kings in succession. And he said the son may be your first king may have come into power by being a great military leader or something like that. But the son and the grandson, they may be fools. They may be no more fit to rule, anything. And so he talks about the folly of monarchy. Now, he said that in the order of creation, all men were created equal, meaning that in the beginning, God did not create one class of men to be above another class of men, that men were created equal. Well, that train of thought comes right over into, for example, our Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. And so that thought that we were equals, it came over into the original government in America, the Declaration of Independence. Now, that in and of itself was a revolutionary idea. That was a basis for treason against the king to say that in that day and time. It went against over 1,000 years of British monarchy, rule by kings. One king was in power, his son, and even in England today, they place a great emphasis on the royal family. I lived in England for 3 years when I was in the United States Air Force. They made a big deal about it then. They make a big deal about it now. Now, they are not ruled, per se, by the king, but they might as well be. They have the royalty, and that does have a part, and then they have the House of Lords and all like that. It's a little bit different now, but the reason it's a little bit different now is because of the influence of America that people begin to see in the world, that having a monarchy, having a king, was not the best way to rule a nation. Now, he argues against monarchy, and he goes about it like this. He says, well, first of all, that's not the order of creation. God did not make one race of men superior over another race of men, that all men are created equal. And then, and what I want to look at today, he argues against it from a scriptural standpoint. And he gives two examples from Scripture against the evils of monarchy. And number one, he gives the example of Gideon. Now, if you know anything about Gideon in the Bible, Judges chapter number 6, Judges chapter number 7, and God called Gideon. In fact, I preached about Gideon on Sunday, on Father's Day, and how that at the beginning he wasn't a hero. He was actually hiding from the enemy, but after a time he became a national hero. He delivered the children of Israel from the oppression of the Midianites. That was the enemy of Israel at that time. And he was so influential in his victory and in his life that the children of Israel, they wanted him to be the king. Now, if you study in the Bible, you find out that to begin with, the children of Israel did not have a king. They had a representative form of government in Moses' day. And what that was, Moses, he chose out leaders, or they chose out leaders among the people. And I mentioned this last week. They would make men leaders over 5 and over 10s and over 50s and over 100s and over 1,000s. And so that was a representative form of government. And if they had a problem, they would take it on up the line. And finally, if nobody could settle it, they would take it to Moses. And that took a great deal of pressure off Moses, because they were coming to him with every little dispute and every little question. So they had a representative form of government. And then you come from that. You come from Moses. You come to Joshua. Joshua was the leader. He was a military leader. And then in the Bible, you have the book of Judges. And God would raise up judges to judge over Israel. Well, Gideon was one of those judges. But after Gideon defeated the Midianites, the men of Israel came to him. Judges chapter 8, verse number 22. And it says this: "The men of Israel said unto Gideon, Rule thou over us, thy son and thy son's son also." So what did they want? They wanted Gideon to be the king. They were not satisfied with what God had given unto them, but they wanted a king at that time. And Gideon basically told them, "Thanks, but no thanks. You know, that's a great honor that you want me to be a king," and everything like that. But Gideon said to them in verse number 23, he said, "I will not rule over you, neither shall my son rule over you. The Lord shall rule over you." So what kind of government did they have in Israel? Well, practically speaking, they had a representative form of government. They had leaders among the people, sort of like we do. And they would go and they'd ask their questions, and if they couldn't get it settled, they'd take it to the next person and the next person. But they also lived under a theocracy. Now, a theocracy, and that is unique to all the nations of the world. The nation of Israel had the Lord, capital L-O-R-D, Jehovah, to rule over them. And so in having a theocracy, God spoke directly to Moses. The Lord spoke to Joshua. The Lord spoke to Gideon. And so they had the Lord as their king. Now, a little bit later on after that, probably 100, 150 years, somewhere around in that time frame, the children of Israel became dissatisfied once again with the Lord's leadership. And at that time, Samuel was the leader over the children of Israel. And Samuel is unique in the Bible. He was a prophet, he was a priest, and he was a judge. And so he had a threefold ministry. He filled all those offices. But they came to Samuel, and they wanted a king. Now, Thomas Paine calls the children of Israel, when they desire to have a king, Thomas Paine says that is one of the sins of the Jewish people. And that was a sin. In fact, when Samuel went before the Lord and said they want a king, the Lord told Samuel, he said, "They've not rejected you, Samuel, they have rejected me." But Israel came to Samuel, and they made the case to Samuel. They said, "Samuel, you're old, and your sons, well, they're not so great. You know, they're wicked. They're not able to serve. They're not going to be good leaders." And they came to Samuel, and they made this plea, 1 Samuel chapter 8, verse 5. They said, "Make us a king to judge us like all the nations." 1 Samuel chapter number 8. And that's what they said to Samuel. Make us a king to judge us like all the nations. What were they saying? We want to be like the other nations. We want to have a king. And Samuel, he warned them. Now, I'm not going to teach from this today, but I would encourage you to read 1 Samuel chapter number 8. Samuel went back to the children of Israel, and he told them, if you get a king, this is what it's going to be like. And I'm just going to summarize what Samuel told the children of Israel. He said, and I've got this phrase underlined in my Bible over and over again, he will take, he will take, he will take. Samuel told the children of Israel, he said, he will take your sons to serve in his army, to plow his fields, to keep up his estate. Monarchy is very expensive. The upkeep of a monarchy, a king, a royal family. Just look at the great expense that is spent even today in England to upkeep the royal family. And so Samuel said, he'll take your sons. He'll take your daughters to be bakers, to be confectionaries, to be servants for him. He's going to take your sons. He's going to take your daughters. He said he will take your fields and he will take your vineyards. What he was saying there, he'll take your property and he'll put it to his own use and he'll grow his own crops with it, with your sons and with your daughters. He said he will take the tenth of your seed, talking about taxes. Boy, wouldn't it be nice if you only paid a tenth today? If you really figure out how much of your income goes to taxes, and I'm not just talking about income taxes, but I'm talking about income taxes, property taxes, car taxes, tax on gas, tax on food, tax on every time you go to the store and buy anything. I mean, we're taxed to death. Hidden taxes, built-in taxes, added-on taxes, everything. You're even taxed now on your service work that somebody does. If somebody changes your oil, if somebody, I had a watch repaired, you know, used to it be just, you know, $10, $15. Well, with tax, for somebody that didn't buy anything, they didn't do anything. Taxes, taxes, taxes. Samuel told the children of Israel, he's going to take everything you've got. He's going to take your sons. He's going to take your daughters. He's going to take your fields. He's going to take the tenth of your seed. He's going to take your men servants, your maid servants. What he was saying, he will take your workforce. And where they used to be in the free market, now these people are going to work for him. What we could say there is they're going to work for the government. And if they're working for the government and you don't work for the government, you are upkeeping them through your taxes. You see, the government doesn't make anything. The government gets all that it has from the people. And then Samuel said this about the king. He said, if you do this, and ye shall cry out, you'll be sorry. That's what Samuel said. Now, I want to quickly go on and say this. In America, I realize we do not have a monarchy. We do not have a king. We do not have a queen. We do not have a royal family. I understand that fully. But we do have something in America that has come in over the years. And what we have now in America is equally just as bad as a monarchy. We have an oligarchy. O-L-I-G-A-R-C-H-Y. Oligarchy. And an oligarchy is this. It is a form of government in which the supreme power is placed in a few hands. What we have in America, what we have evolved into, or I would say devolved into, we have rule by an elite class. Now, our government, if we think about the original design or purpose of our government, and Thomas Paine makes the case for this in Common Sense, and this is the way our government was originally designed. Our government in America was originally intended to have elected representatives. And those that we would elect to office would serve as our representatives. They would serve for a short period of time. And then the people would elect someone else to take their place. And those who had just served in our government would return to their state, to their county, to their home, and they would live under the laws that they had just created for everybody else. And they would live also among those who they had just served. And so that would keep people from amassing power unto themselves. That would keep people from passing laws that they would not want to live under. But we do not have that in America today. This does not happen as it should. Now, I realize there are some that are elected. They go and they serve in a capacity, and then they may go back home and go back to their former life and job or career or whatever they had. But what we have in America, we also have a huge population of what we call career politicians. And career politicians are those that have gone into government, gone into, you know, they've been elected to office, and maybe it's state government, maybe it's federal government, but they never leave. And that's why we have this crowd that rules over us that we can never get rid of. That's why we have, that's why you have cropping up every election time, the Bushes, you know, the Bush brothers, and, you know, they're running, and then George W. Bush, and then you have his dad, and then you have Jeb Bush, and you have all these families that have amassed all this power and all this wealth and all this influence, and they show up over and over and over again. That's why you've had the Clintons now for 20, 25 years, well, longer than that, really, if you go back to him being the governor of Arkansas, but you can't get rid of these people. You know, it'd be nice if they would just retire and go home and take their grandbabies to, you know, on vacation or something. But, boy, they get in power and they just stay and they stay and they stay. And it's not just them. If you look, and you can find this out for yourself, look at all the senators, look at all the congressmen that have been in positions of power for years and years and years. Joe Biden, he was 36 years in government before, in the Senate, before he became the vice president. I mean, that goes back to when I was a little boy. These people have been around since the dinosaurs. John Conyers, 51 years. Charlie Rangel, he's been in all kinds of trouble and investigations and everything else under the sun. He's been up there for over 45 years. Patrick LaHaye, 41 years. Ted Kennedy, he's passed away now, but he was in there for over 46 years. Orrin Hatch, 39 years. McCain, you look at all these people, they're there, and they stay there. And the longer they stay, the more power that they have, the more they rule over us. They never come home. They never live under the laws that they've created for the rest of us. They don't have to deal with Obamacare. They don't have to deal with a whole lot of things that the rest of us have to deal with. We have a de facto ruling class in America, an oligarchy. That's why you hear about these same people over and over and over again. They have much, much power in our government. And here's how it happens in America. Every time we have an election and people get upset about the way things are, they say, well, what we need to do, we need to throw them all out and start over. But you know, that never happens. Everybody wants to throw out somebody else's state senator, but they don't want to throw out their own state senator. And so in the state, they always maintain enough goodwill and power and things like that. They get elected back in over and over and over, and they are just career, they spend their career running for office and getting reelected. And that we say, well, just throw them all out and start over, but that will never happen until in this country we institute by law term limits. And we say, you know, you can only serve 6 years. You can only serve two terms and no longer. And I'll tell you, that would be so good for our country if we could do that and we could get rid of a lot of that crowd that's up there. But Thomas Paine, he went on and he argued this. Israel wanted to be like the other nations. They wanted to be like the heathen. But he said this, their true glory was in being as much unlike the heathen as possible. And I want to say today that what has made America such a great nation has not been how much we are like the other nations, but what makes America great and what makes America the country that people want to come to from all around the world and people want to come to college in America, and people want to move to America, and people want to come to America and start a business, it is not because we are like the, all the other nations for over 200 plus years now. I believe that we could say America has been the greatest nation upon the face of the earth, but it is not because we're like the other nations. It's because we're not like the other nations. That is where America's glory lies in, and that is that she is not England. I lived in England. People say, oh, that would be great to live in a socialist country, and you get free education, and you get free health care, and you get free this, and you get free that. Well, I've lived over there. I lived over there for 3 years. It's not that great. It's a bureaucratic mess. And people in England want to come to America to get health care, or they used to. They used to want to come to America from all over the world to get health care. They used to. But if we become like all the other nations, Margaret Thatcher said this years and years ago. She said the problem with socialism is that you eventually run out of other people's money. And how true that is. You got these politicians, they're talking about free college and free this and free that. That's got to be paid for some way. Somebody else's money you eventually run out of. The glory of America is that America is not France, and America is not Germany, and we're not China, and we're not Cuba or Iraq or South Africa, and on and on and on we could go. But we have an oligarchy today that is trying their dead level best to make us just like all the other nations. But what makes America great is she's not like all the other nations. We are different. We have been different. I'm going to quickly give you a few things in that we are different. The glory of America is that she's not like all the other nations. Number one, we are different in our origin. Meaning that we threw off the monarchy. We got rid of the king. And we became a nation, in fact, the first nation upon the face of the earth that said, you know what, we will practice self-rule. We the people are the government. The people is the king. We the people of the United States, we have a declaration of independence. We're no longer under a monarchy. But through foolishness and ignorance, we put ourselves under an oligarchy, and we've got a ruling class, whether we even know it or not. It's the same old thing every election, every year, every 4 years, same old thing, different promises, but same old thing. Why? Because it's the same old crowd running things. Until we get rid of that, we're going to have the same old thing. We are different in our origin. We have a declaration of independence. We are different in our organization. We have a representative form of government. We don't have a monarchy. We don't have a parliament that rules over us. We're not like Israel. We're not like England. We are a republic. We are not a democracy. We have democratic principles. But a republic has rule by law. We have a constitution that is the supreme law of the land. We have a Bill of Rights. We're different in our origin. We're different in our organization. We're different in our operation. We as a nation once upon a time operated from a position of freedom as opposed to a system of oppression. Well, Samuel warned Israel. He said, "And ye shall cry out in that day because of your king." And we've done the same thing in America. Boy, we need some common sense once again. I see our time is quickly coming gone again. And we appreciate you listening in. I hope it's been a blessing and a help to you. And we want you to listen in this same time next week. Noah's going to come and give our contact information.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer at the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's mtlebanonbc.org.